Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, a Twisted Mr. or two may show up. Everybody liked the music. I got lucky when I found it. He went with the prompt. So he said, yes, yes, yes. So, anyway, ladies, how are you this evening? And hello, Laurent. Welcome aboard.
Hello, everyone. Hey. Doing good, Jim. And yourself?
Well, you know, nothing unusual. Tired. It's that season where I'm ready to hibernate. So that's my norm.
I get that.
I should be like this until spring.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. How are you tonight, Naomi?
Oh, me too. Ready to hibernate for
I'm
real.
I can
never get out.
Yeah, that would be me. Curl up under the blankets, wrapped up around my pillows, and yeah, all that. I'm good. I don't even care if I eat. Eventually I'll eat. It's not important. But yes. So, ladies and gents, we have an interesting contest tonight. We have a lot of what I believe to be decent poetry tonight. It's really nice. And this is all based on, let's see if I can louse it up, Colosso del Apennino, which is a statue that was built moons ago. What was it, the 1500s, I think. God, I could be wrong. Oh, I knew it. I knew it when I was supposed to do the show. I should give you credit. But it's such an intriguing image that was created. And it's a fountain, and it sits out over this pond, this incredible pond. And it is just amazing. Just amazing. So I was glad to see that people were inspired by the image itself. And I did give them, there's links to the information. I probably should open one up, huh? Maybe. I don't want to be too much unlike myself. But, yeah. So we got a great turnout for the contest. And, yeah, it was pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, you know, with that being said, we all can't talk too much. I mean, this is getting, my ears are bleeding from all the noise in here.
Well, you got to stop. You got to pause. Maybe somebody will jump in.
Jump in. I stopped. I paused. So, what does anybody else know about this statue? Pam's the one who found the link.
Has wonderful caves all through it and rooms, and there's even a dragon guarding it in the back, and it's the personification of the mountains, really, I think. You know, he's like the guardian of the mountains. And there was even a war that went on in front of those mountains, like a Roman against, I don't remember there. That was last week. Yeah, that was
I know.
My memory, but I read all about it, you know, but I know there was this war, this battle in front of the mountains there. Maybe Pam remembers.
Pam's probably smart enough to click the link by now. Oh, my God. Let me see what it says. 16th century sculpture of a guardian of Colossus. There. And it was built. Someone had it built for his... I want to say his lover. I don't think it was his wife. It was something to that effect. But, yeah, it's... What you got there, Pam? Anything exciting?
Not particularly, no.
Okay.
Nope, but I will say I do like the prompt. Very cool choice.
There you go. Thank you. It was built in 1580 by Italian sculptor Giambologna. Bologna, something like that. It looks like bologna to me. Oh, no, I'm terrible. But like a guardian of the pond in front of him, the giant is an endless watchful pose perched atop his earthy seat. And it's just really cool. So if anyone has an opportunity to check it out, I hope they will, because it was amazing. And it was amazing to find out that there were rooms inside of it. I'm not sure the purpose was... able to go and tour throughout the statue, through the rooms. Now they don't let anyone do that anymore. I guess they're afraid too much damage can happen. But definitely pretty neat. And it's just north of Florence. Oh, and the fellow who made it, who created it, they wouldn't let him leave Florence. He had to stay. I'm not sure what the purpose of that was, but he was actually held hostage.
Oh, really? Wow.
They didn't use that word. I did. But they did. They kept him there. They wouldn't let him leave. I thought that was kind of intriguing. Well, I'm scrolling, Laurent. You know, I'm scrolling. I'm trying to remember what the reason was. I just think that... Let me see. Classes said that his presence demonstrates connection to man and nature.
It's all right. No biggie. Probably didn't pay the rent.
No, it's not that he lived in the statue. I mean, they just wouldn't let him leave Florence. I'm not sure what the point of that was, but I thought that was kind of intriguing that, the guy just couldn't leave. Pretty amazing. Maybe they just liked his work. I don't know. but pretty incredible. You know, I looked at this, you know, and they're saying someone's saying that it's what was the word they used? The bond of, you know, men and nature. Okay, that was the idea behind it. But when I look at it, I see good and evil, because you see the serpent head that's the fountain, and the hand is holding it down. So that's the way I viewed it. But, you know, what the hell do I know, right? It just seemed right to me. But a very clever piece of art. Incredible. It must be incredible inside, you know, if you were next to it, because you can't just put rooms in anything. Just saying. But, yeah, so thought it was pretty intriguing. Anyway, I guess I should hush now. Hush, 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 hush. Let me see where I want to go. I know where I'm going to go if I don't change my ways, but that's different. Okay, Pam, can I get you to read the first piece for tonight?
It depends on what the first piece is.
Okay.
If it's the first one on the board, then no, sorry, I can't.
That's not what I asked you. I asked you if you would read the first piece tonight. I wouldn't, you know, whatever. Here, I'll just put it up. Go ahead and read it, Pam.
All right. So we have Cemented in Regrets of the Past by Jenny the Deep. Your callous ways put us all in danger. Now you wonder why they treat you like a stranger. Thought you learned from your past mistakes. Instead, loved ones' lives you put at stake. For your sake and safety, I pray, may tomorrow bring a sunny day. Planting your sorrows in your vessel's garden puts your heart at risk to become hardened. Sinking into rocky ground alone, no work, no longer proud. Heavy is the guilt that rests on your stony crown. Lies cost you in your name, you precariously used in vain. Now cemented in remorse over lives you treated like a game. Trust is not an easy thing to gain, but easy to lose. Tell me, what is it that you choose? I see the pain in your disguised gray eyes. Only the truth will set you free from cracking lies. And poem.
Thanks. Good read, Pam. Good read. Laurent, you want to start us off?
Yeah, the photo prompt, I guess, when you described it, it was a hand on the snake's head,
mm-hmm.
or whatever that creature is.
It's a snake.
I hadn't Perfect. Seen that. I hadn't seen that. No, right. I hadn't seen that initially. So if I was going to look at this poem from that point of view, I would assume that this poem is to the Colossus. But with the snake in mind, the serpent in mind, is he talking to the snake? I imagine not, but it just struck me as a possibility now that you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
This speaks to a man who is guilty. Heavy is the guilt that rests on your stony crown. Lies cost you your name. You precariously use in vain. Now cemented in remorse over lives you treated like a game. And you can take that from his pose as he kneels on the ground. Heavy with that guilt that is mentioned. He's lost trust in people. He betrayed someone, perhaps. Who knows? There is pain in those eyes, even as a statue. I thought Jenny did a great job with this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I think, you know, but she took the prompt really well. Like everything Laurent said there, you know, with him being, you know, in rock and stone, his heart hardened, you know, I took it as more of a general message that she spun there throughout this poem, which is related to the statue. that we all carry, you know, shameful remorse to our graves if we do not make things right with those people we've wronged. You know, our hearts mm-hmm. grow hard as rock, as the statue's heart. And so, yeah, I thought she passed a very powerful message throughout this inspiration for the prompt. So great message she shared. Well done, nice. Jenny.
Nice comment, Naomi. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I have to agree with Naomi that this one definitely has a good message to it. And I like how it speaks on the idea that as you continue to lie, as you continue to betray people, it eventually just hardens you and changes your whole mindset and persona. And I thought it was a great write on someone who has complete disregard for the effects of their lies on other people. So very well done.
Yeah, I think that Jenny did a great job with this piece as well. You know, I thought that the, you know, she says in her AN that it, wow, how did I get here? Where am I? Yes. Okay. Wow, I got lost. She said that it's inspired by the photo prompt and real life. So she merged them very well in this. You know, I can imagine that she took the emotions there and just added them right into this image, which was good. I took these two stanzas. I really like sinking into rocky ground alone, no longer proud. Heavy is the guilt that rests on your stony crown. Lies cost you your name, your precarious used in vain. You precariously used in vain. Now cemented in remorse over lives you treated like a game. Trust is not an easy thing to gain, but easy to lose. Tell me, what is it that you choose? I see the pain in your disguise, gray eyes. Only the truth will set you free from cracking lies. You know, just, it was very well done. And I thought it was a great take on the prompt. Very, very nicely done. So thank you, Jenny, for sharing with us tonight. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, let me see. Laurent, can I get you to read the next one by Ben Hart?
For sure enough.
Let's see if I can find the room again. I somehow I got a little lost. Here we go.
It's a maze.
I know. And it's amazing, too. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. This is called Try by Ben Hart. Monuments to the pugilists who never made it to the release of the bell. The lullaby of Bluebird, another loving thought. The makings of a muse, the telling of a truth, and the peace that fought for it. The Frisian. You know these rains on looking back need be. You know these drifts of cloud and depth that ease me. You know the silence that killed the scream. You know the wild ones around which we spin our dreams. You know these families and how they perceive things. You know these promises and know better than to believe in them. You know these ghosts, by name at least. And you know most of all, what it all means to me. The interloper. Hello, Sam. You're getting better at this coexistence thing. Your thoughts are welcome here. This temple could use the song. Thank you for being there to make me more like my mother. The addict. Smile, Jack. They're all looking at you. Isn't that what you wanted? An audience to all these little scenes. You don't want a blind finale. You wanted a grand demise. So smile for the cameras. Nightmares and daydreams, the night. You helped save them, and you did so unscarred. What more is there to ask for? Perhaps to have saved them all but one? I don't know what you mean. I disagree. 5, the muse. Thank you for giving me a place for this dream to grow. Refuge, she called it. But now she doesn't know. And yes, it breaks me. But what am I to do? She doesn't love me, too. But write and try, by God, I try to feel alive without her to set me right. Poet, don't you get it? I was born alone, and in my life of wanting, this was my only medicine. So yes, if I go, this is all you're left with. End poem.
Nice read, Laurent. Nice read. Okay, Pam, I'm going to start with you.
All right. Well, as always, Ben has just brilliant imagery and metaphors, a beautifully written vignette. I like how this seems to be very introspective and philosophical. And it speaks to me on kind of walking through life, feeling like you're putting on a show for curious onlookers while trying to figure out who you are. And it's really great all the way through. But I especially like where he says in part four, nightmares and daydreams, the night, you helped save them. And so you helped save them and you did so unscarred. What more is there to ask for? Perhaps to have saved them all but one? I don't know what you mean. I disagree. And I like that the conflict that brings out of, you know, is anything you ever do good enough? And wonderful, right? And very well done.
Good comment, Pam. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I got, you know, that out of the walk of life too a bit. There's even like love in there. But, you know, I commented, you know, like this colossus of, you know, we all wither away one day in death and return to work. All that will be left of us is the image and memories we have left for others. I got that maybe from that last stanza. And, you know, like our impressions as we get, as we stare at that statue, well, you know, we get that, the only thing that's left is the impression that we imprinted on others while we were alive. So, you know, that's what I got out of it anyway.
Yeah. Nice comment, Naomi. Real nice. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, in a lot of Ben's poetry, he seems to be talking, if not to the reader, to somebody just off stage, right? And it seems to me that he does this as well. In the first vignette, the Frisian, you know, these rains upon looking back, if need be, you know, these drifts of cloud and depth that save me. In other poems, he has taken the same tack. He talks a lot about his relationships or his relationship, if there's a primary one. And the struggle that it's been in many ways. And I've seen abandonment. I've seen heartbreak. I've seen reconciliation. I've seen desperate try to mend fences and a failure. And it seems to me that here he's talking to someone who knows him so well. You know, the silence that killed the stream. That's a deep look into a person's psyche. Right there, and it discusses families as well, and reactions from family members on both sides. I think he talks about individuals when he talks to Sam. We're getting better at this coexistence thing. But again, it's a relationship. It's a compendium of memory, of understanding, of introspection, of just rambling thought in a certain direction, which is fine if it's properly maintained. And then at the end, of course, we get the resolution. I was born alone, and in my life of wanting, this is my only medicine. So yes, if I go, this is all you're left with, is words. What it leaves behind. And there's pain in this poem, and probably a depression perhaps as well. But he exercises his demons very well, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I think that this is another great piece by Ben, as always. He does have a common thread. Actually, there's a few common threads that run through all of his work. And he draws from those wells. Well, and he does it well. How's that? He draws from the wells well. I thought they were well-constructed vignettes, and the story was really nicely told, you know, throughout. And I thought it was nice work. Clever take on it. So thanks for sharing with us, Ben. Great job. Okay. Okay, Miss Naomi, I have one for you. Okay, Naomi, I'm going to put this piece by Betty Page called Guardian of Stone. Whenever you're ready.
Well, youth will be better. Okay, Guardian of Stone. Ancient Italy perched above stone walls, protecting sea-green water. This warrior stands watching over sacred land, so humble yet fierce. Capturing dragons, water spilling out of mouth, peacefully cascades. Serene atmosphere, strong magic of great pond, the fountain of youth. Travelers get lost, wandering through greenery, tall trees stand so high. Mystical echoes, enchanting secret forest, filled with bright rainbows. Colorful sunsets illuminate blue night sky. New worlds come alive. Shimmering starlight awakens stone guardian who hunts for new prey. Fierce dragons surround epic battles in moonlight takes place before dawn. Once sun arises, nothing can be seen when day warrior turns stone. Dragon head in hands covers alchemist tunnels, sacred waterways. As full moon rises, waterfalls cascade again, flashing and sparkles. Waves of crystal blue spilling from fierce dragon's mouth. One drop gives new life. Every man's desire, treasure to be young once more, to live again new. More battles emerge, guardians tie down dragons, keep all from stealing. Use them to ride, he flies over all the lands, protecting life's pond. Pure starlight's magic, glowing illuminations, swirls and light. Magical displays, people come from all around, journey from afar, taste just one drop. Legends say the guardian opens waterways, yet can enter, lest they get past fierce dragon's guardian stone. End poem.
Nice read, Naomi. Nice job. Laurent, do you want to start us off?
No, I don't want to start off. Go ahead and you start. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Pam and we'll come back to you. Okay. Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is great. It's got wonderful imagery and metaphors. And to me, it's just a wonderful write on. I like how she creates the statue, sees the statue as a guardian of the open waterways, and you know it does fit really well with the prompt. I really like serene atmosphere, strong magic of great pond, the fountain of youth, travelers get lost wandering through greenery, tall trees stand so high. You know, wonderful. I really like how she's able to create a story using 5-7-5 lines. And, you know, that she writes about the greed of mankind and, you know, their desire for the riches and youth, and this guardian that has been set up to, you know, fight against that and to fight, you know, the greed of mankind. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And since Naomi read it, I'll go ahead and comment second, and then I'm going to be up. I loved this piece. I really did. I was tickled to see that Betty was inspired to write something like this. It's very nicely done. Like shimmering starlight awakens the stone guardian who hunts for new prey. Fierce dragons surrounds epic battles in moonlight. It takes place before dawn. Once sun arises, nothing can be seen in day. The warrior turns to stone. I thought that was a very creative take on the prompt, you know, whereas he wakes in the evening and the night and fights his battles or hunts his prey. And then when the sun rises, he's back to stone again. I thought that was pretty cool. So, Betty, I think you did an excellent job with this. I did like your imagery all the way out, throughout. And I thought the tale was great that you told. Really nice job. Liked it. So thanks for sharing. And Laurent, now we're on you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. She took, you know, what she had in front of her, which is the Colossus, and the information that is generally available about it, and created her own little world, her own history of what happened. And mm-hmm. she gave flesh to the bones that we see in front of us. And I thought it was great the way she carefully built and expanded on the piece. On the Colossus, and brought it to a nice resolution. Because when you do that, when you tell an interesting story and give yourself the freedom to invent, not wildly, but based on available knowledge and a little bit of imagination, really helps bring the character to life. That's what you did in this book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Naomi, how about you?
Well, I think, you know, Betty Page, she really did her research for this mm-hmm. poem. And because, you know, she talks about the epic battle in moonlight. She talks about the dragon, you know, which mm-hmm. is there, which surrounds the statue, the fierceness, because they talk about the fierceness of his eyes, you know, he is like sad, but there's a fierceness that you feel that when you look at him, you feel this fierceness. That's what people say when they visit. And also she married all those elements that she took with the history of the Roman battle that took place there, right there at the foot of the mountains. And mm-hmm. she weaved all that together to make us great, right? So I found this really amazing. So bravo, Betty.
Yeah, I do agree. I thought it was an excellent piece. Okay. Next piece I'm going to put up is called Frozen Sadness by Kind Poet. I'm going to try and give that one a read. See how I go. See how it works. Centuries have encircled him. Since he froze in time, he squats there, too encrusted in misery and grime. Bewildered he would be by the changes made in history. Modern morals and liberal laws to him would be a mystery. Now we scrutinize this legend, who's so ancient and strong. Now we marvel at how this statue could survive this long. He must have foreseen his solid statuesque existence. It appears as though he saw no point in forcing his resistance. Defeat was certain as he crouched into this changeless stance. Fate froze his features with sadness and rage under this circumstance. End poem. Nice. Okay. Naomi, you want to start this one off? Off mute.
Off mute, Naomi. Okay. Yeah, there's a great message also in this poem, you know, about, you know, how today's morals and our laws would be, you know, for him a mystery, you know, that we're going kind of down road there. And, you know, it forces him into, you know, defeat, which, you know, it did this defeated, crouched, changeless stance that fate froze his features with sadness and rage under this circumstance. So, you know, he'd maybe just be appalled where, how we're going downhill and, you know, with all our, the world today. So amazing, amazing poem, you know, by kind poet.
No, by kind poet, silly. Kind poet. Okay. Well, yes. Pam, can I get you to comment next?
Oh, absolutely. Wonderful rhyme and flow. Brilliant imagery. I really like how Kind Poet, you know, brings us along with her thoughts, you know, strong emotive lines. And, you know, I do really appreciate that she's brought to life this stone artwork and makes us ask questions, you know, especially when she says, "Now we scrutinize this legend who's so ancient and strong. Now we marvel at how this statue could survive this long." And you think, you know, what a great thought there to bring forth that the existence of this statue and you know, has lasted, you know, and it tells a story. And it's just a remarkable piece of art. And I feel like she's really brought that forth, and she's really brought forth the personality within the artwork with her lines. So very well done.
Absolutely. And Laurent, how about you?
Centuries have circled him with the frozen time. I think, let me speak for myself. I've always been a little overawed by antiquities, things that have been around for thousands of years, things you could touch, hold in your hands, et cetera. It seems to make time and the world that you write about a little more real. And here we have this, this legend who's so ancient and strong. How we marvel at how this statue could survive this long. With a lot of the buildings that we have in this United States are not very old. Many are built to last 20 or 30 years and then be torn down. In antiquity, they built things to last. But Lord, even the ruins are in good shape. The statue itself, fascinating to look at. And I liked the take, especially on Naomi's interpretation of the statue personified, seeing his existence, seeing what was going to come and realizing there was no point forcing his resistance. Therefore, he was crouching in defeat. That was well said. Great poem.
Nice comments, everybody. Yeah, I thought this was a poem very well written by Kind Poet. I liked how she went before the stone. It had
good Lord.
Yes.
Was somebody having an asthma attack or something?
No, it was a machine. It was a machine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Bewildered he would be by the changes made in history. Modern morals and liberal laws to him would be a mystery. Now we scrutinize this legend, who's so ancient and strong. Now we marvel at how his statue could survive this long. See, you know, I liked her thoughts throughout the poem. The very first stanza I thought was intriguing because since he froze in time. So it takes him, the poem goes before that, you know, that precursor to the statue. I thought that was kind of a clever take on it. But I think that she really did a fine job at capturing his story. And I think it's, yeah, nice work. So thank you so much, kind poet. I think it was great, right? Absolutely.
And hello, because she's on the board.
Hello, kind poet. I'm waving. I'm waving. See, I can wave. Whee! I don't know. I don't see anybody on the board. I think I'm just not.
You're a bloody tsunami. What are you talking about?
So what am I
doing? Waving back.
Yes. So, Laurent, that's going to bring me to you for the next piece. This is called I Walk Alone by Red Summertime. So if you wouldn't mind giving that a read, I'd appreciate it.
I'd be happy to.
Thank you.
I walk alone. I walk immersed in solitaire. My thoughts ablaze, seeking the sky. Prodding, I feel the weight I bear. My spirit drifts, questioning why. Flickering lampposts light my way through winding paths of cobblestone. Whispering winds carry my say. I wander in this world unknown. Each step I take it goes far. And in my thoughts a whisper stirs. With memories that reach and mar the longing that my vision. For the empty streets speak to me. Each crack and crevice holds a tale. Secrets as a boundless sea of love and dreams that had set sail. As I, in solitude off the beat, walk past doors that never open, the city sleeps slumber deep. With windows sealed, no words spoken. I walk alone the empty streets, yet roads may stretch beyond my sight, where shadows dance and silence greets the stars that guide me through the night. Through storms may rage and tempests roar, I walk alone, but not alone. I walk alone forevermore, and in my thoughts the world I own.
Nice. Great read, Laurent. Great read. And Naomi, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, you know, I walk alone, but not alone. You know, that is so thought-provoking because, you know, indeed we are alone, but we're never alone, really, because, you know, we always have our thoughts, our imagination, our memories, our goals, our plans. You know, sometimes we have our regrets, we have the acceptance, you know, so alone is an important time and much needed for self-reflection and meditation, I think, to help us grow as human beings. So I think he brought that all out in this poem and, you know, wonderful, wonderful write.
Absolutely. I have to agree 100%. I think that this, the statue itself has the facial expression is one of, you know, reflection, thinking, mm-hmm. You know, just got that wonderful expressive face. And I think that he captured that really well in this piece, you know, because some people go, well, flickering lampposts light my way. What's he talking about, you know, because of the image. But he did it. He caught it. And he captured and expressed it very well in this piece. So, Red, I think it's an excellent, excellent job. And thanks for sharing with us, for sure. And Laurent, how about you?
I'm glad you just mentioned what you did. Because he has a very noble mean, a very noble look about him. If you told me that was Zeus, I would accept that.
Right.
That's in my mind's eye, yeah, that's a god. That's the son of a god.
Mm-hmm.
So I do appreciate what you said. Walking alone, but never alone. He could be talking about a God who's always with him. And he's always going to be walking, but, you know, he's not walking, he's kneeling. He's fixed in stone. He can't move. And yet, in a way, he walks through time. This is the way I see it. I walk immersed in solitude. Walks alone. Each step I take, it echoes far. Again, he doesn't take steps, but he has taken steps. Time are his steps. You can interpret this in a variety of ways, but I just take it almost lyrically for what it is and enjoyed it thoroughly.
I was just looking at his author's notes. And I was like, I don't remember writing that, because first I thought it was he just kind of picked up from the contest. But the poem can be interpreted in different ways, as poetry allows for multiple perspectives. Possible interpretations are a loss of hope, the birth of resilience, the recovery from difficulties, the toughness and substance to spring back. The speaker finds solace and intrigue in the quiet and abandoned spaces. The empty streets symbolize a sense of loneliness and isolation, but they also represent an opportunity for reflection and discovery. The poem depicts the hidden emotions mirroring the vastness of the sea, and overall suggests that even in desolation, there's a beauty and depth that can be found in the remnants of love and unfulfilled dreams. And in my thoughts, the world I own. So that's what I have to say about that. The IN is almost as good as the poem, you know, in its thoughts. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Okay. Let me see. Yeah, I like that very much. And for my next magic trick. Okay. Now, Laurent read that one, so now I have to move on. Well, Laurent, you're going to be tired. You got a lot of male rights here. A lot of them.
It was your best shot. Come on, it was your best shot.
Absolutely.
I can take up my voice.
No.
Okay. Cam, are you back?
Yes, I just happened to get back.
Okay, well, I will put this one up for you called Again Will You by Blue Right 76.
All right. What sought your hungry eyes, needy hands, by lakes and mountains? Wander, white beard, Dumbledore of medieval pages, looking for the worm that crept away to dangle on dainty threads that pull in the fish, fins that dance. What eyes betray those sagging shoulders? Much troubles you, sweet, gentle giant. My bloody hands blackened your waters, betrayed your forest, fested our dreams. Birds whisper lost, respected wizard, failure keeps me away. Lost you in eternity, look up, dear ghost, into mine guilty eyes. Again, will you? End poem.
Nice job. Nice read, Pam. And Laurent, that brings me to you.
Yeah, there's an element of regret, if you will, some kind of failure, perhaps, that's occurred. What eyes betray those sagging shoulders? Much troubles you, sweet, gentle giant. Where's the other one? Yeah, in the last three lines of the second stanza, well, here, let me take it this way. Wander, white beard, Dumbledore, medieval pages, looking for the worm that crept away, to dangle on dainty threads that pull in the fish, fins that dance. As he used deceit, as he tempted someone or something in the past, only to be found guilty, if you will, having made a mistake. keeping somebody at arm's length when they should have been embraced, perhaps. I'm not too sure. This is a charming poem. The last lines, lost you in eternity. Look up, dear ghost, into mine guilty eyes again, will you? His eyes, guilty, does he know something? Has he betrayed? When he says, blackened your waters, betrayed your forests, is he speaking about mankind and has polluted the earth and the land around them? I don't. But I like what he did with it.
Yes. Nice comment. And Naomi, how about you? Off mute, Naomi, off mute.
My gracious tonight. Wanderer Whitebeard, Dumbledore of medieval pages. That's so neat. You know, Harry Potter's Dumbledore. When you look at the statue, you see Dumbledore there. But I start off by saying I applaud him for that. You know, that's a great reference to back to today. But yeah, me too. I like Laurent. I feel this heaviness of guilt here all the way through this poem. I think he took or she took the expression on the face, his slumped over, as if he's given in there, he's collapsed, you know, with this heaviness that he has on his shoulders, this guilt that he feels. And I think she transported that throughout the poem. So we're very well done, Blue Wright. I really enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And Pam, how about you?
Yeah, I love this one. It's beautifully written, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I really like how it takes a look at past failures that weigh heavy on the spirit. And speaks of the sorrows of someone who feels as if, they had to spill blood for whatever reason, it's that whole idea of the being sorry for the damage that you have done by your actions. I really thought this was beautiful all the way through, but it was that second to last stanza with what eyes betray those sagging shoulders, much troubles you, sweet, gentle giant, my bloody hands blackened your waters, betrayed your forest. Those were my absolute favorite lines. So very well done.
Yeah, I have the same lines lined up there, Pam. Absolutely. I thought it was a nicely penned take on the prompt. And I enjoyed the addition to the show because I thought she captured something there. What eyes betray. I'm right there with you on that same exact section. It really, because she caught it with the sagging shoulders. Much troubles you, sweet, gentle giant. And that again is captured well from the prompt itself. I kind of like that, definitely. So excellent work, and thanks for sharing. As always, good stuff. Now let me see. Okay, Naomi, I got one for you. I kind of reversed my directions here. So this is called Seething by Dot Writes. Off mute. Please. Naomi?
Yeah. Okay, sorry. I lost the page on myself. Okay, Seething. When the frigid chill of his burnt-out life ignites with the gasoline, I pour to put him out. Maybe the blaze will scorch the icy crystals blooming concrete hard like barnacles where a heart once beat. End poem.
Well, nice read. Pam, I'm going to let you go first.
Yeah, this is a wonderful brevity that has a really nice flow to it. Amazing imagery and metaphors, and despite not being very long, has powerful lines that speak to me on a life that has surrendered to burnout. And it's really difficult to separate any one part, but I have to say I do especially like the lines, crystals blooming concrete hard. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Absolutely. Nice comment, Pam. And Laurent, how about you?
I don't know whether it's sarcasm that Dot is using here, but when the frigid chill of his burnt-out life ignites with the gasoline I pour to put him out. You don't pour gasoline on someone, put them out. You're going to catch a blaze. As she says, maybe the blaze, which she knows is coming, will scorch the icy crystals blooming concrete hard like barnacles where a heart once beat. She's going to scorch the inner portion of this son of a gun, who evidently has done her very wrong. His burned-out life doesn't sound to me like somebody who got burned out working too hard, got burned out in other ways, frivolous ways perhaps, but definitely no heart left for her. Therefore, blaze. I liked the poem.
Right. Yeah, it definitely had a little bit of Hell Has No Fury going on there, in my mind.
There you go.
You know, where was it? Maybe the blaze will scorch the icy crystals blooming concrete hard like barnacles where a heart once beat. You know, it's just a cold, concrete, uncaring. I mean, that's what I'm getting from it. You know, there's no life in it. It's just cold. You know, I always tell everybody I don't have a heart. It's made of stone, you know, just a rock. So it's kind of, I can kind of almost get where she's coming from. But definitely a nice piece, and Dot, and well done. I mean, I think you hit that right note there, but Hell Has No Fury. And Naomi, how about you?
I read it. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm in between. She says anger in her AN, so... you know, deep, dark anger, very dark. So I'm a bit with Laura, but, you know, you can take it as, you know, the way that, you know, as burnout as Pam, you know, stated too. So, you know, it was different ways of looking at this poem, I think. So,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So wonderful, wonderful, powerful lines and a very... poignant brevity by Dot Wrights, for sure. Amazingly done.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Laurent, I want to put this one up for you. It's called Dreaming Stone by Laurent Ivan. There you go.
Okay, let me catch up. I'm falling behind.
Okay, Pam's going to sing us a song while you're catching up.
I'm caught up. Pam. I'm right here.
That'll get up to move faster.
Yeah, he jumped in fast, eh?
Oh, no, I was just slightly behind us. All right, Dreaming Stone. Oh, Dreaming Stone, beneath my knee is bent in brotherhood with thee, silent upon this too solid earth, possessing of neither grief or mirth. Little dog stone, how once you leapt from mother's womb, erupting in red-faced fury, chasing stars as Icarus sought the sun. Bones of the world, annealed in flame, drawn from the dank and dark, cleaned and formed, off-trix, born rib of a colossus, as I sprang to your side, alighting of fortune, you are a taciturn beast. We are fallen from the firmaments, harvested soil of the cosmos, long weathered, graying and languishing, immobility in a serene context. Silent stones drawing birds who flutter, land, and decorate with avian nonchalance. Nobility besmirched, cleansed by mother's tears, dawdling, eternal, slow dressers in green. Each year, peels cracking, peeling layers until we are too thin to see in the shadow. End poem.
Nice read, Laurent. And Pam, you want to start us off?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Wonderful read and write there, Laurent. I really like, first of all, the title, Dreaming Stone, which within two words, you give not only life to that statue, but, you know, a sense of a soul, a spirit that dreams. Let's see, amazing imagery and metaphors all the way through. I like how you bring into here a creation story with the lines, born rib of a colossus, thus I sprang to your side, alighting athwart, you are a taciturn beast. And by the way, just a great command of language there. We are fallen from the firmament, harvested soil of the cosmos, long weathered, graying and languishing, immobility in a serene context. Silent stones, drawing birds who flutter, land, and decorate with avian nonchalance. And I like that you bring in the aspects of the birds who are drawn to the silence of this stone giant, and to the tears of Mother Earth. Beautiful, right, and very well done.
Thank you.
And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, this is amazing. I just love those last two lines. Each year peels, crackling, peeling layers until we are too thin to see in the shadows. Wow, that is an amazing line, Laurent. And, you know, so, so profound. And like Pam, me too, I love the way that you brought the birds in, and you know, you just captured all that statue is, you know, even from that first stanza on, with you just personified it so well, and little dog sound how once you leapt from mother's womb, erupting in red faced furry, chasing stars as Icarus sought the sun. Yeah, you know, you even brought in mythology to it. So that's just amazing. What a great play all the way through. Just so well done. And what a beautiful flow to it all, too. Amazing, huh?
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. It was wonderfully penned piece. I think you captured so much from the image. And I like that a lot. Bones of the world, annealed in flame, drawn from the dank and dark, cleaned in form, taught tricks. Born rib of a colossus, thus I sprang to your side, alighting athwart you. You are a taciturn beast. I don't know. We are fallen from the firmaments. It's just wonderful all the way through. Each stanza is really something. And, you know, the birds, yes, that was another great line. I mean, I could have just copied more. You know, just said, oh, yeah, I'll take it all. Naomi knows I've done that. I have.
Yeah.
Right, Naomi? I didn't lie.
Oh, yeah, I laughed so much.
But, you know, sometimes it's hard to, like, just pull something specific because, you know, as always, you know, each, well, not always, but a lot of times, you know, each stanza just feeds into that next one. So to cut it off kind of is like cutting something in half. And I hate to do that, but then I feel silly if I, you know, grab up four or five stanzas out of a poem. But it was just really well written, excellent work, and really enjoyed it. And I'm happy you wrote for the piece. I kind of thought you would like that. Thought you might get something from it. Okay, now let me see where I'm going now, because it's hey, that's better. Let me see now. Got that one and that one and that one and that one. And okay. I'm assuming at this point that Jody Melton will not be calling in. So, Laurent, oh, no, you just read that one. I can't give you another one. that would be a little silly. What do I have down here? Okay, girls, it's time to get out our deep voices. Okay. Pam, I'm going to give you this next piece by Star I9. And here it goes. This is called Eroded Statue by Star I9.
Eroded statue is ruggedly worn, masculine, virile, encrusted in moss, the edges of stone relentlessly shorn, leaving an image emboldened by loss. Water lay gathered near pedestal base, reflective of time between rippled waves, colossus steady with movement apace, as grotto persists, mist verdant in plays. Accompanied by constant companion, a canine focused upon distant shore, spectators gaze through optical canyon, while antique vision arrives at the fore, and surviving still to this very day, with centuries past ensconced in decay. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. And Laurent, you want to start us off on this one?
Sorry, I'm behind again. Come back, come to me next, okay?
Okay, Naomi, would you like to come in on this one?
Yeah, you know, he really captured this statue all the way in beautiful rhythm and rhyme. You know, the eroded statue is ruggedly worn, masculine, virile, encrusted in moss, the edges of stone relentlessly shorn, leaving an image emboldened by loss. You know, he brings in emotion into this poem. He brings in all the details, but he especially brings in what you get as you gaze upon the statue. I think, you know, the visitors that gaze onto the statue, what they take away from the statue, and it's really amazing. And well done, well written.
Nice, Naomi. And Laurent, you ready? If not, go to Pam.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes. Pam, you don't have to sing. It's all right. You don't have to strum your guitar either. It's fine. what I like most about this is language. I'll just take the first stanza by example. Eroded statue is ruggedly worn, masculine, virile, encrusted in moss, the edges of stone relentlessly shorn, leaving an image emboldened by loss. The way the juxtaposition of certain syllables, the sibilance of the sound, the eroded and encrusted following each other by two different lines, not a big deal, but it all, every little bit adds up. To a whole that is excellent. I love the way he describes the piece itself. The water lay gathered near pedestal base, reflective of time between rippled waves. How do you convey the impression of time? In this case, it was done between the rippled waves. just a great piece that appreciates something that has survived to this very day, but with centuries past and its constant decay, he's still there. Everything else is decaying. It's a nice observation. It's a nice poem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. And Pam, how about you?
Oh, this is beautiful. I mean, it's such a brilliant written sonnet. I just really enjoy how they paid tribute to the statue itself, to its antiquity, to the minute details, not just the big picture, but painted the small pictures as well within. I really like this all the way through, but I especially like second to last stanza with accompanied by constant companion, a canine focused upon distant shore. Spectators gaze through optical canyon while antique vision arrives at the fore. So it becomes not just about the statue itself, but about the people who are observing the statue. And excellent write and very well done.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. I thought that was nicely penned in, a great take on the prompt. I like the direction the image took him. Water lay gathered near pedestal base, reflective of time between rippled waves. Colossus steady with movement apace, as grotto persists, mist verdant in enclaves. So, you know, just nicely done. Just nicely done. I really liked each one of the stanzas. I put this one because, you know, there I'd be capturing three more. So I didn't want to do that. So well done and enjoyed. Okay. So now, let me see. The room is here somewhere. I know it is. There it is. Pam, you're bad. Now you know he meant
I can. Yeah, I knew that too. I couldn't resist, so.
He's been having trouble with his leg all day. So.
Oh, poor guy.
Yep. Okay. So, Naomi, I'm going to put this next one up for you, and this is called Man Amongst Mountain by Jody Mountain. Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay. Man amongst mountain, in the heart of the Italian land, Colosso del Appino stood grand. Had he drawn breath and had life's spark inflamed, what tales of this titan would have been named? From the Apennines his gaze would stride, surveying the world, his heart filled with pride. His massive feet would tread the earth, causing tremors and in valleys rebirth. He'd stride to the seas, his toes would seize the waves that came with an effortless ease. Fishermen would tell of the giant they'd met, whose laughter was louder than storms they'd bet. Children would play by his immense heels, finding in his shadow cool summer fields. He'd tell them tales of ancient Rome, of gods and gladiators, their eternal home. But with the night, as stars would glow, a gentler side, Colosso would show, lying on his back, looking at the sky, dreaming of galaxies and celestial signs. The moonlight would dance on his stony face as he pondered time, fate, and his place, dreaming of mountains where titans reside, or of beautiful nymphs by the ocean side. Yet in his heart a loneliness dwells, for in this world no other giant excels. To love, to share, to have someone near, was the silent wish he held most dear. In the end, while his legend may thrive, the question remains, can stone come alive? For colossal, imagined in life so free, remains but a statue for all to see. End poem.
Nice read, Naomi. Nice read. And Pam, you want to start us off on this one?
Absolutely. Well, here we have another brilliant rhyming poem. I really like how this one makes me think of the Norse mythology of the giants of the mountains, some of which were the mountains themselves and some of which were the giants that lived, you know, in and around the mountains. I also thought it was great that he fit the name of the statue into the poem, and it flowed so nicely. Great storytelling ability. He'd stride to the seas, his toes would tease the waves that came with an effortless ease. Fishermen would tell of the giant they've met, whose laughter was louder than storms, they bet. Children would play by his immense heels, finding his shadow cool summer field. And so I like that he has made this giant into somebody who wants to help, who wants to interact, and becomes a legend because of their kindness. Wonderful, right? And very well done.
Absolutely. I thought this was an excellent piece. It was very well written. I love the story he told all the way through. But I grabbed it here. From the Apennines, his gaze would stride, surveying the world, his heart filled with pride. His massive feet would tread the earth, causing tremors in the valleys rebirth. Gosh, I can't read for crap. He'd stride to the seas, his toes would tease the waves that came with an effortless ease. Fishermen would tell of the giant they've met, whose laughter was louder than storms they'd bet. I just thought this was just great. First of all, we all know I like rhyming poetry anyway. And I think that he did a wonderful job telling this tale. He didn't really miss a beat with any of the rhyme. The rhyme and meter was spot on. And I think he really captured something out of the prompt and told that story well. So great job, Jody, and thanks for sharing with us. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, what a wonderful write this is. The rhythm, mm-hmm. the rhyme is just spot on, and he really gives the statue, a personality of its own. And, Pam was spot on there with the reference to the Norsemen and their mountain guardians, because if you look up the research on this Colossus del Apennino, he was the guardian of the mountains. So, mm-hmm. Was the guardian of those Apennino mountains. And so you can tell that he Jody did some research here throughout this, right? But from that research, he went on to spin a wonderful, wonderful tale of and just humanized this mm-hmm. statue. Yeah, he gave it a beautiful personality. And, and the ending is so wonderful. He imagined in life to be so free remains but a statue for all to see. So he even incorporated him with having dreams of being alive. So that's really, like fairy tale likeish way, but it romantic. I shouldn't say fairy tale. I should say more a romantic approach. He gave him a romantic. He gave him a heart. He gave a heart to the statue.
Yes, he did. Yeah, he did. Yeah, it was a great piece. And nice comments. Okay, Pam, the next one I'm going to put up is by Time Tiller. And if you will give it a read, it's called Choose Love Prime by Time Tiller.
All right. Choose Love Prime. Prime sat alone contemplating how he ended up here. He had practiced love and kindness, yet everybody seemed determined to twist and misunderstand his every word and action. Jokes were taken seriously, too seriously, and relayed all over the land, so there was nowhere Prime could go where someone or another wasn't upset with him. His every action was deliberately made wrong. Every thought uttered, acted against, and over-challenged. Every expressed idea taken to one extreme or the other. Every sentence depicted as sarcasm until he was driven insane. Show love, said Paris, like me and Helen, and all will be okay. Show love, said Odysseus, who had come to kill Paris, and all will be plain sailing. Have grace by your side, and all seas will be calm, said Agamemnon's high priestess, as she placed a ship in his window. Priam listened to these voices of reason and thought they must be right, except for one thing. Wasn't that what he was already trying to do? Yet the world was determined to punish him. Not just punish, but torture him, as the world never said what it was he had done to them. Sure, his children were responsible for some wrongs in the world. Paris had stolen Helen. Yet as he sat there, he recalled how it was the gods that placed a spell upon Helen. So how was it Paris's fault, or more importantly, his? Now Odysseus says, show love. He has killed Hector, wants to kill Paris, wants to sack Troy, yet he says to show love. If I were a dog, I would howl at the stars tonight. Odysseus, you have done me wrong. More importantly, are doing me wrong, yet you want my love. As you drive the blade of your sword, the point of your spear, into my cold, cold bones, you say I am to forgive you. You have right on your side, you say. Well, I am Priam. Let me tell you, all those that demand love, when you have tortured and molded like the slave traffickers, I have shown nothing but love, and you have spewed it in all directions as hate. You think you have broken this old man to the point of compliance upon his deathbed. Well, I am lost to the world, but not so lost as to believe you are right. Your righteous indignations at my family and our behaviors are no more loving than the hand in the hornet's nest. Your claims of victim are lost upon the stone I sit on. As you are determined, turn me into the narcissistic poor me. It's true to say I am sorry for the hurt, but as you have tortured instead of punishing, then it is hard to feel empathy for you, Odysseus. Remember, you made me beg for Hector's body. Your hate is disguised by your claims of noble deeds, killing my children and sacking my city. And as I will by dying beneath your might, I will remind you of your hate and its cold vengeance. You're doing wrong to do right. My negativity, another slanderous accusation that has everybody training me as their king. Not this time, Odysseus. Your actions are more wrong than any of my children. It is wrong to do bad things at someone to see if they will do the right thing, and slyness will always meet its karmic equal. Your horse and its hidden death will be punished equally by the gods. For when people who think they are in the right do things slyly to another, they too will be punished, no matter their religion. This old man will die tomorrow, of that I am sure. But I am no longer afraid of you, Odysseus, as this old and not so wise king has learnt one thing. All the mathematicians and physicists have told me the gods rule all, and we are mere puppets following the laws of their universe. What is and what will be, what is, and what will be, and we are never in control of our destiny. Everything is predetermined by the God, and that Odysseus means your ideas of free will and their justifying of the killing and sacking of my city is not love, but is the corruption of love behind the idea of free will. It's written in the stars, Odysseus. We are cuddled by the love of gods and their predetermined laws. I will leave this world knowing that in my time upon it, I have empathy for all the victims I have caused, more so than you, Odysseus, as I have been the victim too, and always understood it was Odysseus. You are a warrior, but you are no king, and Egemenon knows how I feel, yet his greed for wealth drives him here to take back his dowry and your misguided heroic deeds of right from wrong. I shall sit here upon this rock of Troy and wait for your final act of what you call love, Odysseus. End poem. And oh,
excellent.
My goodness, I'm going to go get a drink of water.
I have to. Oh, my gosh. I had no idea this was that long when I handed it off to Pam. I was like, oh, no. Okay, Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, well, you know, this is a tale of a really crooked, misguided free will and love, you know. Yeah, really crooked, you know, and it's seen through mythology, which, you know, really was messed up, you know, these gods fighting amongst each other and you know, using these ideas of free will to sack and destroy people and each other and whatever. And, you know, y'all related that to the rock because the statue is of rock. So as as he brings it all together in that last sentence, I shall sit there upon the rock of Troy and wait for your final act of what you call love, Odysseus. Yeah. So he brings it all back to that rock, the rock of the statue. So wonderful run all the way through and well thought out by Time Teller. And, you know, very clever write and with sound thoughts and thought provoking too.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great piece. A lot of thought went into this piece. That's what I got to say. I don't think I would have been able to hold on to that thought all the way through like you did. But I have to say, I grabbed up the last stanza and the last sentence. I will leave this world knowing that in my time upon it, I have empathy for all the victims I have caused, more so than you, Odysseus, as I have been the victim too and always understood how it was. Odysseus, you are a warrior, but you are no king. And Agamemnon knows how I feel, yet his greed for wealth drives him here to take back his dowry in your misguided heroic deeds of from wrong. I shall sit here upon this rock of Troy and wait for your final act of what you call love, Odysseus. Very profound statement there. I mean, it's not like for the story it is. Not in reality, but it was so well done that it all pulled together as if it was a true story. So I think that Time Teller really did an excellent job with this, and what a wonderful take on the prompt. Definitely a nice job. And Pam, are you back?
I am, yes. Wow, I have to say that. Yeah, Time Teller put a lot of thought and energy into this. I like how he takes the familiar characters of Greek mythology and turns it on its head. You know, how he has Priam, the king of Troy, confronting Odysseus. And I like that it's ancient mythology, and yet it really can speak to the people of today, because it takes a deep look at misguided views of love and free will, you know, and it's the idea that you're free to do what you want, but you're not free of the consequences of your actions. And so just a brilliant storytelling right all the way through with a really epic feel to it. Very well done.
Great comments, ladies. Great comments. Definitely an excellent piece. Okay, the next one I'm going to put up, Kat, I'm going to try and read it because I can make a disaster of it. This is called A Stone Titan by Cedar Chapman. A stone titan erects from the bedrock, burst from granite bones, mountain marrow and human reverence, each boulder hewn to a forgotten deity, eroding beneath the forest canopy. With hands larger than Jupiter's moons, he grapples a grotto that screams forsaken songs of yesteryears, while crystalline streams weep over yawning caves below. His beard drapes below his visage as he gazes downward, disenchanted, diseased with bleached barnacle lesions, having witnessed his maker's 10 engraved obelisks stained by epochs of bloody wars, poison trees, and smog-filled skies. As the sun sets over the Tuscan horizon, northerly winds chafe his body, slowly unfurling the sediment-like pages of an ancient tome. Yet he remains stoic and steadfast, even as the world fades into insignificance under his watchful eye. End the poem. And I'm gonna read you the author's note on this, because I thought this was pretty cool too. When I first saw the photo, I felt a sense of disappointment and loss of faith in humanity. I thought to dive into this feeling a bit further and explore what it would be like under his watchful eyes. The maker's 10 engraved obelisks is a symbolic reference to the 10 commandments. A nice author's note there. And Pam, do you want to start us off on this one?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is a nice author's note. I'm glad you read that. I love the imagery and metaphors in this. I thought it was both beautiful and brilliant and just an excellent write that spoke to me mainly on time passing beneath the disenchanted gaze of a titan who once knew the beauty and the purity of this earth. And this is amazing all the way through. But I especially like where he says, his beard drapes below his visage as he gazes downward, disenchanted, diseased with bleached barnacle lesions, having witnessed his maker's 10 engraved obelisks stained by epochs of bloody wars, poison trees, and smog-filled skies. So here is this godlike figure that has watched through the eons humanity destroy Earth with violence and pollution. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Yeah. Yeah, great comment. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with Pam, that bloody wars, poison trees, and smog-filled skies. Yeah, we live amongst that today. And, the stanza that I really like, I really like that one, but also the one above it, with the metaphors and the imagery that he uses, with hands larger than Jupiter's moon, he grabbles a photo that screams forsaken songs of yesteryears, while crystalline streams weep over yawning caves below. There's just, it's this sad, haunting feeling to this whole rite. I don't know if you guys got that, but that's what I got, This heavy disillusionment, if that is a word. I just got that out of this poem, this so much emotion in here, as well as beautiful metaphors and imagery. So, but Cedar, of course, you can't expect less from him. Such a great writer. So wonderfully written. Bravo.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was just a wonderful write. You know, I was looking at the stanzas and going, yeah, I like that one. No, I like that one. Yeah, I like that one. But I have to say, I do agree with you, Naomi. There's something about that line. With hands larger than Jupiter's moons, he grapples a grotto that screams forsaken songs of yesteryears, while crystalline streams weep over yawning caves below. You know, and then it goes on about his beard. And I think that that one and the next stanza, I think, are two of my favorites. It was so well written. And I think that it really, it had a lot of emotion or feeling to it. And I liked that, you know, above all else. So excellent job, Cedar, and thank you so much for sharing with us. It's always good to have one of your rights in the contest and on the show. The show definitely was a wonderful addition. Thank you so much. Okay, now I have to figure out where I'm going because I have no clue. But I'm still getting there. It's okay. We're still getting there. Slowly but surely. Okay. Okay, Naomi, the next one I have is Bookworm Dave. And I'm going to put that up for you to read. So whenever you are ready.
Okay.
This is called Stoned God by Bookworm Dave 227.
Okay, Stoned God. His statue stood by the lake. Many thousands of years passed. He just sat there silently with his adoring followers. Now it sits in silence, the chants once sung are silent, the sacrifice is gone, those who thought of him as a god. Now the newer god is worshipped, these statues lay or sit waiting. They will not be prayed to nor sacrificed till they stand in awful silence. As the waves gently kiss their feet, as the fish and other creatures live on, his once loyal worshippers found a new temple in the guise of churches capital. Museums share in the art, but do not expect it to be worshipped as it is explained. We have removed them from God's status. We believe in our true God, not the one we believed in so many years ago. And,
nice read, Naomi. Nice read. And Pam, do you want to start us off?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is a wonderful write on, to me, that mainly speaks on the idea of the old ways making way for the new. And I don't know, just kind of the idea of ancient ways and ancient times dying out. I thought he put like great thought into his lines, and you know, I especially like his opening lines and where it says, now it sits in silence, the chants once sung are silent, the sacrifice is gone, those who thought of him as God, now the newer God is worshipped. And then where he says, museums share in the art, but do not expect it to be worshipped. You know, I thought those were some thoughtful lines on the whole idea of, you know, just how history goes from figures being gods to just mere works of art. So interesting concept and very well done.
Absolutely. And Naomi, oh, no, you're going last. Sorry. Pardon me. Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was a great piece by Bookworm Dave as well. I thought it was well penned, and he had great imagery, and the story was well told. I kind of picked it up here right from the top. His statue stood by the lake. Many thousands of years passed. He just sat there silently with his adoring followers. Now it sits in silence. The chants once sung are silent. The sacrifice is gone. Those who thought of him as God. Now the newer God is worshipped. These statues lay or sit waiting. They will not be prayed to, nor sacrificed to. They stand in awful silence. It was, to me, an interesting take on the prompt, because, you know, I mean, I don't think anyone actually, like, he and Cedar. Cedar had the Ten Commandments in there, leaning towards God a little bit, and this one definitely hasn't. I guess when you look at it, I guess it could be. I mean, because when I said good versus evil, I thought of God with his hand on the serpent, you know, so I guess it's not too far-fetched, you know, to come up with that thought. And I think he did a fine job with that, the old and the new gods. Like you said, Pam, it was a transition in the thoughts there. So great job. And thank you, Bookworm Dave. Appreciate it. And Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I was away, so I missed some of your comments. But, yeah, I think, you know, out with the old, in with the new is pretty much the way to resume this poem. You know, to see him as, you know, of course he's so huge and he's so massive that he can be viewed as a god, and, you know, which is replaced by today's God and today's churches, like he says, and today's cathedrals. So, you know, wonderfully well thought out piece, and a bravo, Bookworm Dave.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. Well, Pam, I'm going to ask you to read this next piece, and this is called They Thought to Exile, Double Treason and Refrain. And this is by Liquid Mind Forever. Oh, my gosh. Forever. Liquid Mind Forever. Let me say it in English. So whenever you're ready, honey.
All right. When one is unique, none compare. Jealousy's treacherous sets about setting solo lair. Fearful deeds, lecherous, I lived among the rich folk then, but tarry among the poor folk when I lived among the lepers in a secret glen. When one is unique, none compare. Envy strikes, vultures blow. Destruction all proclaim and swear. He must go, he must go. A witch's spell they cast upon, and I soon vanished, and 'twas gone. A witch's spell, a witch's spell. They hoped their hatred soon would spawn. When one is unique, none compare. Aggrieved my life and breath, my seed they spilled, for it 'twas rare. Banished they thought my death, but fate did bless my soul with grace. Implanted, gone, none could erase, but fate did bless. No evil left, just love's embrace. When one is unique, none compare. Deception takes control of hearth and home and leaves one bare. Heartache, their sentient goal. Goddesses and gods ask for naught, their spirit in forgiveness fraught. Goddesses and gods ask for naught. They overcome as lessons taught. When one is unique, none compare. Those feel inadequate, they're blind, sighted, live in despair. They're doomed, harassed by fate, what seems to be disastrous. Nothing but tomfoolery's trust. What seems to be disastrous is laughable to those of us. When one is unique, none compare. They try to kill and maim. 'Tis the likes of us who declare they suffer, die in shame. We love, we live, we strive to give to the best and least we forgive. We love, we live, we strive to give. Lenience become love's perfect sieve. End poem.
Nice read, Pam. Nice read. And Naomi, you want to start us off? Off mute. Oh, hey, Naomi dropped. I don't think she'll be commenting on this piece. You know, great. Oh gosh, what's the word I want? I think she did an excellent job with the treason refrain. I do. In fact, I think she made it a little bit more elaborate. Didn't she, Pam?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I think she doubled up on the piece at the end of each stanza. if I'm not mistaken, because I think it only, I don't know. I mean, it works. It totally works. And I find it to be kind of clever that she pulled it off. Yeah, three times I went to say it, and three times the word escaped me. So I guess I'm not supposed to say that. Anyway, I thought it was a great piece. I'm trying to fit it, the image in here, and I'm sure that it is. I think that it was like just a brief mention. But I think it was a nice piece, and I think it kind of does work with the image. I call it an image. It's a statue, but we only have an image to offer. You know, she has the gods and goddesses ask for not their spirit and forgiveness taught. Goddesses and gods ask for not. They overcome the lessons taught. You know, maybe that's where it took her. You know, the gods and goddesses. Because it does have that Zeusian kind of feel. You know, when you look at it, it does, you know. And I think, you know, Laurent definitely nailed that when he said it earlier. It definitely, you know, you can pull that whole thought off. But I think this was a great piece and very well written. And, and a great use of the way it's written. I liked it. I like the Trojan refrain. I think it's always a nice way to do things, but clever and well done, Deborah. Thank you very much. And Pam, what did you think?
I like this. First of all, as you were saying, the Trojan refrain is a great form. It's one I haven't ever tried myself. And, you know, reading a poem this beautiful makes me want to challenge myself to do that. Beautiful rhyme flow, amazing imagery. To me, I see the inspiration from the statue in two ways. First of all, what you brought up with the mention of the gods and goddesses, but also because the statue has such a kind of a look of sadness, and I don't know if sadness is the right word, and because, you know, I mean, obviously there's other things there around the statue, but there is a sense of it being by itself. And so I think when she speaks on the idea of rejection, where it says, when one is unique, none compare, envy strike, vultures blow, destruction all proclaim and swear, he must go, he must go. And I think within the statue, but this is just my interpretation of it, Deborah saw this rejection from society. This is just an amazing rite. And I like how, to me, one of the main messages that I get from it is the eternal power of love and forgiveness, you know, and staying true to yourself, because that's where the true power comes from.
Right.
And it's beautifully written all the way through and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Great comment. Now, let me see. I think we might get one more in, and then I'll take the last three for carryovers for Friday. So we might get two. We never know. This is called Old Ezra by Ken Smith. So, Pam? Oh, no, you just read that one. I get to read this one.
All right.
I got myself all confused. Doesn't take much. Okay, so let's see. Old Ezra, you could have been that statue, 36 feet high, mountain of a man of literature, avant-garde modernist. You brought Britain into the 20th century, selling England by the pound, taking Eliot out of the bank cellar, made him poet laureate. While playing secretary to Uncle Willie, your nickname for Yeats complicated you, played both ends of the pen. Founded the Imagist movement with just a couplet. The apparition of these faces in the crowd, petals on a wet black bough. Literary colossus, you blended in so well, old master. Stalactite tang from your ragged beard. The rooms inside you house your 120 cantos. Unfinished epic, like a statue not fully carved, still emerging from a block of stone. End poem. about it. Pretty clever piece. Okay, Pam, what you think?
I like this. I will admit, when I first read the title, I immediately thought of the prophet Ezra from the Bible, who brought the laws to the Jewish people at a time where they were scattered throughout the earth and needed to have a sense of connection. But obviously, as you read, you see that he's writing about Ezra Pound. And I found that very intriguing. And I like when people make my mind spin in a different direction. I find it very captivating. You know, this has amazing imagery and metaphors, and I thought it was a wonderful rite paying tribute to a poet who really changed the landscape of literature with a deft touch. So excellent rite by Ken Smith, and very well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was really clever, clever and well-written. Wonderful imagery, as you said. And, of course, I had to fix something, and I lost my place in my brain where I was. But I think that it was just a really it was a clever take on the prompt. It came from someplace completely different, as you said, Pam. It wasn't anything we were expecting. And I think that that's what I liked about it, because it was different. Like, so many people tonight have hit on this image in different ways. You know, some have captured something in the look in his face. Some have captured his posture. And I find it amazing, like, those little things have sparked people to write in different ways. And this one was totally different. And there's nothing wrong with that, that's for sure. But, yeah, really a great, that's the word I wanted. I thought it was just incredibly creative. So I want to thank you so much for sharing with us, Ken. Wonderful piece, and glad to have it on the show and in the contest for sure. A wonderful job. And ta-da. I'm working on a headache. It's not
and good. For Phil's next magic trick, she's going to...
I'm going to put up one more poem.
Okay. All right. Round of applause.
Yes. Yes. Oh, wait. I'm not supposed to
play. Yeah. Your hands need to be free to post the link.
Oh, my God. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready. This is called Narcissus Aged by Cecil Miller.
All right. Sounds good. Weathered, broken down, standing, sinking in the ground, still he looks, a gaze he casts into his pool of memories past. There was a time and time again wherein he counted Flo as friend, but Flo, like time, begins to slow, and what was friend becomes a foe. And so now he sits upon the land and reflects on younger man. End poem.
Wow. I like this piece. I like this piece. Again, you know, someone captured the fact that he's looking down into the water and looking at that reflection. And I think that that's pretty, you know, a great take, definitely. But I like the rhyme in this, and I like the meter, you know, weathered, broken down, standing, sinking in the ground. Still he looks, a gaze he cast into his pool of memories past. I like that very much, very much. And I, you know, I thought about in the next stanza, wherein he counted Flo as friend, but Flo, like time, begins to slow. And what was friend becomes a foe. After a while, if you're a rock, and after a while and the water flows, it starts to break you down, starts to wear on you. So, I mean, that's the way I took that next section. But I think it was a very, very well-written piece and a great great addition and a great entry to the contest. So thank you, Cecil, very much. Much appreciated. Okay, Pam, whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, I have to say Cecil is a new name to me, so I look forward to reading more of them and, you know, hope they will be inspired for future contests for our shows. I really like, and you said this, I mean, the different takes on this one prompt have just been absolutely intriguing and made for a wonderful night of poetry. And again, we have a different approach. Here we have someone who is taking the mythology of Narcissus, who is so in love with their own reflection that they couldn't move from that place. And I like how he shows within this the passing of time and memories of youth and how, you know, it's that whole idea of, you know, looking in the mirror and, you know, basically thinking, who is that old person in the mirror, you know, or how did my mom get in the mirror and all that. But it's also a serious message of how we become so enthralled with youth that we forget the blessings of aging, the idea of the, you know, the mature heart and the mature mind that has learned so many lessons. A wonderful brevity and very well done. And absolutely, just a great show tonight, Gene.
Thanks. Yeah, I was really pleased with the poetry we got for this. I was glad that everyone kind of they were inspired by the prompt, and I like that. You know, sometimes it happens, and sometimes, well, it just doesn't. And I think that I was impressed by the writes that we did receive. And everybody did such a fabulous job. There wasn't a bad write in the bunch. Not one, you know, not even one I kind of look at crosswise and go, what? You know, because sometimes I do that. I won't lie. Sometimes I get a little confused. But see, I'm usually confused to start with. So that you all have to keep that in perspective when I say these things. But yeah, it was a good prompt. I was pleased I found it. So I look forward to, I look forward to all these people writing again for the next one. Now I got to find something that I can put out there and maybe get such the same kind of response. I like it.
Right, hey, exactly.
Halloween is coming. Pam, Halloween is coming. Halloween is coming.
I am so excited. Yay!
There's nothing better than Halloween week around here. We all get crazy.
Oh, absolutely.
Contests and try and get a whole bunch of wonderful poetry, you know, on all different topics. But yeah, be sure to check it out. Delving in the Depths of Darkness is kicking off our Halloween week shows. So anyone who is interested, that contest is up. Break on Truth's contest is up. I have like four contests up. Do I have four or do I have five, Pam? I have four, I think.
I thought you had five,
something like that.
You have somewhere between four and six.
Four and six, that's five.
You have five.
Yeah, she went and counted. See, that's what she did. But, yeah, so
I
mean, we've got a lot of stuff happening, and we're looking forward to everyone's contributions to the contest. So we have a lot of material to work with. I look forward to it. Get them thinking caps on. Come up with some crazy stuff for us. We like Halloween around here. Anyway,
do.
Yeah, so that's about the extent of all of our fun with that. But yeah, check out all of our hosts and hostesses. Everybody should have something running. Some don't have them up yet. Don't get me wrong. Because, you know, some of us are slower than others.
But they will eventually be up, so
right.
Keep an eye
right.
out.
Yep, keep an eye on things, and we'll check it out. So thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us tonight. Pam, great job. Naomi, great job. Laurent, thank you so much for roughing it and, you know, being able to participate for a while tonight. And, and I guess we'll see you later on in the week. Well, who has tomorrow night, Pam?
What do we have tomorrow night?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. We have me and Naomi, The Art of Seduction, poetry inspired by the art of Pascal Torah.
Ah, there you go. Okay. Okay, everybody check it out. I don't know if there's room for more. There might be. And if you can't get in the contest, throw it on the topic board. We'll be happy to read it. And everybody take it easy. Pam, thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Bye.